Hello, everyone. Welcome to Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. I'm your host, Willie Morales. And on today's show, I got Scott Myers, who's the owner of Kingdom Storage Holdings. Scott, thank you so much for being on Peer-to-Peer Real Estate. How are you?
Hey, William. I am fantastic and great to be here.
Well, listen, first of all, Happy New Year. Welcome to 2021.
Happy New Year to you as well. And yes, welcome to 2021. I think a lot of people are saying that these days.
Yeah, definitely, especially after last year. So Scott, One of the questions I like to ask all entrepreneurs, especially someone like you, were you always an entrepreneur? Was this something in your blood? Or as you got older, you started, you became an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think it was in my blood, but then also maybe a product of my upbringing as well. I was the last of four kids, and my parents had me when they were older. They were 40 when they had me, and so they thought, well, the other three didn't die, so I don't think anything's going to happen to this one. And so I was kind of left to go do my own thing. Right. And so when you're off kind of doing your own thing without a whole lot of supervision, then, you know, when it came to school and then working for other folks, I didn't really like authority too much. I didn't like people telling me what to do. And so, I always just had a desire to, I guess, kind of go at my own speed, go at my own pace, and without a lot of supervision or people holding me back. So I'd say it's a little bit of both. I think it was wired that way, but also a product of my upbringing.
Well, I love the fact that you just say you didn't like taking orders from anyone. So right then and there, You knew you weren't going to be an employee. So
yeah, I'm not a good employee.
What did you do before real estate? Anything in between, you know, let's say your high school years to real estate? Anything you did before then?
Yeah, well, the idea when I got out of college was that I was going to go work for a Fortune 500 company and make a whole bunch of money, but do it in sales so I could have that freedom and not have a boss, you know, lurking over my shoulder. but then I still realized that I wasn't cut out to be an employee. And so I worked in sales, in telecommunications. I worked for AT&T, Lucent Technologies, and Ameritech, which was the local Bell operating company here in the Midwest. And then started buying rental properties along the way, just as kind of a hedge for retirement. I had my money in a 401k with the company, and they were doing a match. But then during the dot-com crash of 99, I lost about 300 grand. And then that's when I decided to really start ramping up my real estate holdings because, you know, it's not going anywhere. I could see it, touch it, feel it. And I was the manager. I wasn't cooking the books.
Yeah.
And that's when I began to look at the shift to getting into real estate.
So what was your mindset at the time when you wanted to get into real estate? You know, because that's, you always hear this, Scott, is you got to have the right mindset. You got to have the right mindset to do this. So what was yours at the beginning of your career?
Yeah, you know, in the beginning, I didn't really sense that I was going to do this full time. I just kind of gravitated towards it. And then, you know, once I began to, you know, that was a pivot point. You know, you lose 300 grand in your 401k. I began to sit back and, you know, kind of take a look at the numbers, put pencil to paper, and realize I was making more money, even though it was part-time in real estate investing, I was making more money per hour investing in real estate part-time than I was working full-time. And again, my retirement was there. I could see it, touch it, feel it. I knew who the managers were. I didn't know who was making decisions at AT&T and Lucent Technologies, and they held my retirement accounts. You know, it was in their hands. And so it was really that was kind of the mindset of the shift. And after reading Robert Kiyosaki, you know, that just, you know, kind of pushed me over the edge and realized that, you know, if I truly want to control my own destiny and do it in an asset class that's going to provide both income and wealth for retirement in a hard asset, that this was the way to go. And so I think it was kind of a culmination of all of that. And again, just being entrepreneurial and not really wanting to be, you know, at the mercy of other people that are making decisions for my future instead of myself.
No, I understand that perfectly clear. So the book that you read for Robert Kiyosaki, was it Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Of course, yep.
Isn't that like the standard when it comes to any, I tell people that and they all agree. So can you tell us about your first investment and how did you fund it? Because, you know, and I'm pretty sure you deal with this, Scott, when we talk to newbie investors, they always find it, they can find the deal, but it's always the money part. So can you talk about your first deal and how did you fund it?
Yeah. So, you know, this was early on in the game. I've been at this for a while. My first rental property I bought back in 1993. And at that time I was following. So some people may know or remember Carlton Sheets. He was the guru. So William, you and I know him well. Some of the other folks may not. But, you know, his whole philosophy was going out and finding these bread and butter ranch, 3-bedroom, 1-bath ranches in the bread and butter working class neighborhoods. And, you know, in the median income ranges, maybe even on the lower end a little bit. And, you know, buy them, rehab them, or the Burr method now, buy it, rehab, refinance, and rent it out. And so we did that. And the way I funded it was I did have some money for a down payment, but this was back in the day when there were assumable VA mortgages out there. And there's very few of those available, if any, now on any single family home that hasn't been refinanced. And so I had the ability to step into those with a little bit of money of my own and then refinance. And then I take the proceeds from that first one and I bought two more. And same thing, bought them. They had VA mortgages on them that were assumable, refinance and refinance those. And then after that, then I was on my way to just, you know, paying, getting traditional mortgages or credit lines and buying them in more with more traditional means. But I had a little bit more equity that I could put into the projects to go buy them.
Yeah, no, I love that strategy where you bought, you got it for low money, you refinanced, you took the money, and instead of you buying a Maserati or James Bond type of car, you said, you know what, I'm going to buy some more properties.
27 years later, I still haven't been able to part with the money to buy the nice car yet. Maybe someday.
Maybe, right? So what did you see in self-storage compared to other real estate niches? What was it about self-storage that you said this is, because I'm fascinated with self-storage. I don't know much about it besides what I see on TV, but I see your, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. No tenants, no toilets, no termites. Well, tenants, but you know.
Right. Well, you know, and so that is our mantra, you know, as you've probably seen from our website, and it's no tenants, no toilets, no trash, and you can certainly add termites to that as well. So it's not as much as what I saw in self-storage, it's what I didn't see. Yeah. And that is, there aren't tenants. There's clients that store their stuff there.
Yeah.
And when they don't pay, then we get to lock them out and sell their stuff off. And so we have the benefit of being protected by lien laws in warehousing and in self-storage versus the habitational laws or eviction laws in real estate for folks in apartments and houses where the tenant is protected. So
and it can stay there for six, and it can stay there six, 9 months while you're coming out of your pocket. And so if it's 30 days or longer, Scott, do you get to chance to sell off this stuff? How does that work?
Yeah. So in a nutshell, most states are the same, but they all have their individual lien laws. And after on the sixth day of the month, rent is officially late. We put a lock on them. We serve notice. And then over the course of 90 days is what the lien process is. We send them certified letters. And if they don't pay, we can't find them, then after 90 days, we get to auction their stuff off. The good news is that, you know, we get almost all our money back in those instances. Not always, but, you know, we sell it off. And then the person who buys it, they'll usually rent that unit with the stuff in it until they have time to get it out or sell it off themselves. Right. So we immediately create another client, you know, when we sell it off. So we get up to and including sometimes even more than what was owed on that unit in back rent and late fees at the auction versus a house or apartment where I go to court after that same amount of time and walk out with a little yellow piece of paper and collect no money. And then I have to go rehab the thing again, you know, carpet, paint, you know, replace, repair.
And it comes right out of your pocket. Yeah.
Comes out of the pocket. And with a self storage unit, I get the money back as I sold it. And then when that person moves out and we get the stuff out of there, we take a blower and we blow it out, moving the next person waiting in line. There's zero cost in turning it. So that's a long winded answer to your question, William. But that, my friend, is that's what sold me on self storage. And no tenants, no toilets, no trash, the turns, I get paid. I said, this is it. This is the way rental real estate should be.
I know. I agree. So are we seeing, or as you explained, with storage that are, you know, that's past six, let's say 30 days, 35 days, is it just like we see in Storage Wars, those reality shows where you have like about 100 people bidding?
Yes. So the shows have been very good to us in the industry.
Okay.
Put it that way. We all know that, hopefully I'm not breaking any secrets here. I apologize for the public service announcement, but if anybody thinks that reality TV is real, then I don't mean to burst your bubble, but it's not.
Yeah.
However, the process is roughly the same. And so it's about a 90-day process, and they cut the lock off, open the unit. They can't step inside. They can't breach the threshold. You know, they can look in with their flashlights and like you've seen on the shows, you know, their night vision goggles and ladders and everything else to make good TV. But yeah, then the bidding begins and the highest bidder wins it. And they close the door, put the lock on, and we created a new tenant. We as the owners of the facility until they move their stuff out and sell it off. And if they do, then we move in the next person waiting in line. So from that standpoint, procedurally, yes, it is correct.
Well, we're talking with Scott Myers from Kingdom Storage Holdings. So how did you acquire your first storage unit? Can you tell us that process?
Yeah, bought it in a partnership with a partner where two other partners were getting a partnership divorce. And they were basically making sure that neither one profited from this project, to the point that they even lowered the price so much because they both hated each other so much that they neither of them wanted to put a penny in each other's pocket. Craziest thing I've ever seen. But
really?
That the good news for us is we stepped into about $700,000 worth of equity in the project when we moved into it. So we each put in a small amount of money, and the appraisal was so high compared to the cost that we had a high LTV loan on it. Not that it was over leveraged. It was just that they priced it 700 grand below what it was. So we had a small amount of money into it. We leased it up. Bought some land next door, added more buildings to it, and increased the occupancy yet again. And then I sold to my partner. And then I went out on my own and began buying facilities on my own. And then eventually back to creating not partnerships, but joint venture partnerships, where I'm the managing member and doing syndications and raising capital as the managing member.
You know, what I love about storage units, and like I said, and I appreciate you being on, is just the fact that it's needed. Tell me if I'm wrong. It seems like it's recession proof, because God forbid if somebody loses their apartment or their house, you know, you have the storage units available, and it's usually in the same city or maybe a few miles outside of the city. Am I correct in that?
Yeah. Well, no business is recession proof, but we're about the closest to it. Every time we hit into a recession, this will be my third that have gone through storage. In terms of real estate, storage is the top. It outperforms all other real estate asset classes. And we're always in the top five in terms of sectors of the economy as a whole. Alcohol, liquor is always going to be number one during a recession. Goes without saying. No surprise.
Right.
And we're usually somewhere second or third along there because of just what you said. I mean, you've done your homework. Businesses downsize. Individuals lose their jobs. They have to downsize or moving back home. Businesses are putting their inventory, you know, and their furnishings in until they can, you know, turn things back around. And so, we don't celebrate a pandemic, and we don't celebrate a recession.
Definitely not. But
we benefit greatly from that. And so, you know, we know that we're in a good position, and we've been preparing for, you know, this coming recession since, you know, the last one. But the pandemic has added an extra burden on the economy, and it added an extra couple of points in occupancy for us, because when businesses shut down so quick, they put their stuff in storage. When colleges shut down quick, we got a whole rush of people putting their stuff in storage again. And then when companies were shutting down their offices, everybody was sent home. You know, these income earners, sometimes one, sometimes two in the household, you know, they had to clean out the spare bedroom, the, you know, formal living room turned into an office, and all the furniture went in storage. So we have had a double, if a triple whammy boost in occupancy during COVID, and we haven't really headed into the recession yet. And so we know that once that happens and more, you know, the free money that's going out there right now is gone, then these, you know, apartments will begin to evict again, and banks will start foreclosing, and we'll see another huge uptick in occupancy. So as an industry, again, we don't celebrate this, but we're poised to do very, very well as the industry always does during a recession.
Now, so if somebody wanted to get in, and I want to talk about the education part of storage, but if somebody wanted to get into a storage unit investing, is there a number that you recommend for newbies to get into? I don't even know what's the smallest amount of units that someone can get.
Well, you know, that's going to be different for anyone. You know, there's always an intrinsic value to an investment. You know, our students, the sweet spot is kind of where we started, is somewhere in that $1.2 to $1.5 million range. And I know that maybe, you know, shocking for some folks, or high for some folks that are used to single family homes, but at the end of the day, this asset class is the darling of commercial real estate, and lenders are throwing money at it. Private equity partners are throwing money at it. You know, other folks that you could raise capital from wanting to get a piece of self-storage, especially during a recession. So buy as big as you can possibly buy, because that also means, you know, with economies of scale and a larger facility, you know, you can afford a third-party property management company, or at least a manager to manage it. So you're not having to do as much of the heavy lifting. And then when you create changes, you know, across 400 or 500 units, when you have a $5 a month or $10 a month rental increase, you know, that dramatically, exponentially increases the value of your investment versus, you know, 100 unit facility. So, you know, it's a multi-tiered answer to your question, William, but, you know, buy as much as you can, that, you know, as long as the deal makes sense. And it's actually a little bit easier on all fronts to attract capital from lenders, private equity partners, and to manage.
Right before I got on, I was looking at some storage REITs, and my God,
they're just going like gangbusters. Yeah.
Oh my God. I was seeing Cube and I think it was
Public Storage. Space.
Yeah. Public Storage. Yeah. And I was looking at them. I'm like, my God, I mean, I knew the sector was huge, but I didn't know how huge.
Yeah. Even to invest, I mean, a REIT, for those folks that aren't familiar with that, a real estate investment trust is basically a mutual fund that invests in self-storage. Yeah. And there, the returns that some folks are investing passively in those are outperforming some of these active investors that are like us that are all buying facilities, you know. Yeah. I mean, we do better than that because we've been around a while, but some beginning investors, they may be better suited to just invest and kind of learn along the way by investing in buying shares in a REIT, learn the business, and then go out and do your own.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about the education part. Mm-hmm. And on your website, I saw that, you know, you made mistakes in real estate and you're trying to obviously to cut that curb down for investors. Mm-hmm. What did you learn about your mistakes? Like, can you talk about one or two that off the top of your mind and you say, well, I'm not going to do that anymore? Does my question make sense?
Yeah. No, it sure does. It sure does. In the beginning, I think probably one of them overarching is that I didn't like to have partners. I mean, it goes back to, once again, my childhood, you know, I didn't want to bring anybody in, but then I realized that, you know, if you want to go farther, the old African proverb, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go farther, go together with other folks. And that's what I realized. And so I met enough folks with gray hair early on in my 20s and 30s that said we would never do a project unless it was with partners, and I would never be able to grow my business if it weren't for my partners. And so I took that advice. And, you know, once I got over my fear of bringing on partners, as long as it's structured correctly and I'm the managing member, so I still have control, that gave me the freedom to go out and create these joint ventures, other partnerships, and then ultimately syndication and bringing in private equity and setting up, you know, private placements with the SEC. So that was probably, you know, the first, I call it a mistake and maybe just a late start more than anything. Yeah. And then second is just, you know, feeling like the control piece and feeling like I have to do it all on my own. You know, so hiring a virtual assistant and then hiring other staff and just leveraging other folks. I mean, they're kind of one and the same in terms of a mistake. Outside of that, I, you know, there's more mistakes that I see my students make, or people that just, you know, they rush into it and doing just really dumb things like, you know, not getting a feasibility study before they develop, or not, you know, consulting with somebody, or not learning the business, period. They're just going out and, you know, that, well, this looks easy. It's got to be easier than houses or apartments. And, you know, I heard some guy, Scott something or other on YouTube, talk about no tenants, toilets, and trash. How hard can it be? And they go off half-cocked and they don't learn about underwriting a commercial piece of property versus a single family property. You know, single family property, you look at comps in the neighborhood and, you know, get estimates on your rehab costs. Pretty simple formula. Commercial real estate, whole different animal, lots of more items, you know, in a P&L statement, and then a backing into a cap rate and an NOI that determines the value. And that's a bigger math exercise.
It's a lot more math, a lot more itemized, you know, what you want to call deduction or expenses. So go ahead. I'm sorry, Scott.
No, that's it. It's really the mistakes I think that most people make is they underestimate, you know, how much goes into it in terms of buying it and then managing it afterwards. And they go in maybe just a little, maybe a little aloof and realizing, you know, like any investment, you make your money when you buy. And I think people just need to do a little more due diligence before they get into it, I would say, is probably the mistakes that most people make.
Yeah. So if somebody wanted to work with your company, what would you look for in an investor or even a student? Because I want to talk about your mastery program, you know, following up. So if somebody wants to get, you know, work with you, what would be your criteria that you require?
Sure. So both sides, as you mentioned, you know, we invest and we bring in private equity partners. And as I mentioned, some folks can invest in a REIT. And we don't have a trust. We're not that big, but we do private placements. And so passivestorageinvesting.com, you know, that is our site that has all of our projects where people can invest passively. You know, they can invest, earn money, good returns, safe haven. They get tax benefits of that, K-1s and depreciation by investing in those projects, and then learn the business from that standpoint, you know, as an outsider. But then folks that want to learn on the active side and go out and do exactly what we're doing and being on the active side and being the promoter, the syndicator, just the owner of your own facility, our other website and our education company is selfstorageinvesting.com. And so that is has a whole slew of resources, as you mentioned. It starts with a home study system. We have software for analyzing and doing that analysis of a project, like we mentioned. And then we also do have a mentoring program. So we have group coaching.
Talk more about that.
We coach people, which is, you know, coaching is one sided. Here, go do this. You know, this is what you need to do. Here's the next step. They show up on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
Go do this. So we have coaching programs, and we also have mentoring programs where we come alongside of you. We say, you know, here's what to go do. Now bring it back and let's go break that down. And it's one-on-one. Now go out and do it yourself. And then we'll, you know, also come back and tweak. And then in some cases we partner with our folks in our mentoring program as well. So just an entire suite of resources to help people get involved in self-storage, however they want to do it, actively or passively.
No, so you got, and which I love, you have the support where you're mm-hmm. pretty much yep. side by side, and then you tell them, hey, now you could do this on your own.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. That's, you know, we teach people how to get into the business, and that really started, to be honest with you, William, because I started out with, there wasn't anybody, there wasn't an organization like ours, there wasn't a Scott Myers out there teaching people how to do it. But then once I had to learn, my School of Hard Knocks and the lessons that we mentioned and hiring and paying for consultants and, you know, that were my mentors. And, then we decided that once I started doing this, I was the president of a large real estate group here in Indianapolis, and everybody wanted to take me out to lunch and pick my brain. And I didn't have enough time for that. And some cases they wanted me to pay for lunch. So I said, all right, enough is enough.
Really? So they're asking you to learn and asking you to pay.
Yeah. Go figure.
That's the rich guy.
Yeah. So I said that enough's enough. And that's when we created our home study system and just said, smart. You know what, here's what we'll do. We'll, you know, I don't want to turn people away. I want to help them. There isn't a resource out there. So we created that to free up my time. And it really wasn't necessarily as a moneymaker, and it hasn't been, but what that has offered us on the education side is it's profitable. Don't get me wrong. But the profit in real estate is in doing the deals. And so if I can teach people how to do the business and do it right, first of all, that makes better investors out there that aren't bidding things up, as we all know, and making it competitive.
Yeah.
But then if we teach them how to do it the way that we're doing it, when they go find too many deals or a big deal that they can't take down on their own, then they contact us and we can review it. And, you know, they know what we're looking for because we tell them what we're looking for. And that opens us up to partnerships or wholesaling opportunities where we can help them to wholesale it to our group of folks as well. So, you know, the two really do blend together and meld into one very nicely.
Do you cover the all 50 states, or is there certain states? Okay.
We're not in all 50 states, but we're nationwide. And so we'll go over the deal is. We don't really canvas a market or say, hey, this state is ripe or this city is ripe. You know, our folks and our brokers, and by way of, I speak for the trade shows and the associations. I write for Forbes magazine. You know, we have a lot of opportunities that come across our desk. And so if it makes sense, and then we, you know, we back into the market and make sure the market is strong and we'll invest in it. So that's, we do it maybe the opposite as some people do.
No, that's great. I love the fact that, you know, when you're teaching these guys or all of us how to do it, what steps to take, and you're side by side. So tell us more about your podcast.
Yeah. So the podcast, like I think many folks during COVID, it's been on the back burner and something I keep saying every year. Yeah, for the past 2 years, oh, we need to do a podcast. It'd be great to do a podcast. And I've seen the benefit and how it's, you know, helped to grow other people's businesses. And, you know, now that we had the time to do it, we had to pivot. We weren't doing live events and we were looking to reach a broader audience. Really for our passive investing side, you know, folks that we knew were going to be looking for a place to invest their money now that they've been let go from their jobs and they have a 401k that they now could convert to self-directed. And we had a lot of projects on our plate. It was a way for us to reach and kind of teach those people how to vet somebody like us or a syndication deal and teach them about the business and how to look at, you know, a project